All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of Time Out of Talk. We're your host, Raphael Singer.
And Hunter Leon.
And we're pretty far in the first round of the NBA playoffs. Some of the series have already concluded. And I'm going to be honest, there's a lot of surprises here, a lot of exciting games and storylines. So let's just jump right into it. And I just talked about how it was really exciting. Let's start with the least exciting game, and that's the Sixers sweeping the Nets. Pretty much just dismantled them. I mean, I don't think there's too much to say here. We talked about the Nets being the worst team in the playoffs and that, it would be a miracle if they even sniffed a chance at winning a game, but
I will say,
anything
let's.
else?
I don't think we have to talk about the series specifically, but let's talk about the health of Joel Embiid a little bit.
Yes.
Yes, because I believe it was in. Did he even play in game four? I'm not sure if he played in game four, but if he did, it was limited minutes because he injured, I believe, his knee.
Yeah, it's a sprained LCL, apparently.
Yeah, so this definitely has to be a concern for the Sixers organization. Considering that he has dealt with health issues his entire career and he finally had a stretch of good health, and you obviously want him to be the dominant center that he needs to be, because in the next round you're most likely facing it would either be the
Boston or Atlanta?
Boston or Atlanta. So most likely you're going to be facing Boston, and that is probably the favorite out of the East, so you cannot be messing around. We've expressed our cons or you've expressed some concerns about James Harden and his performances in the postseason and some inconsistency there. So this has to be a major concern for the Sixers moving forward. So what are your thoughts on the whole situation for Joel Embiid?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously not ideal if you're a Sixers fan to have, your superstar player with another injury in the postseason. I mean, like, it just seems like a recurring thing year after year. Like, I remember 2 years ago against Washington, I think he missed that whole series. The Sixers won, but then he had to play through his injury against Atlanta. And I think the way people are talking about this injury right now is that Joel Embiid is not going to be 100% no matter what in that next series. He's going to have to play through injury. And when you're playing a team who's at the caliber of Boston, or at least like the Boston that we know they can play to, because we've seen them be shaky in this first round, you need everybody playing at 100%, especially when I think at times James Harden has looked a little lackluster. He's definitely lost a step. I think at this point in his career, he doesn't have that quick, explosive first step off the drive. And he's just settled to being more of a facilitator. So if you need scoring, if you need someone to take over a game, it's got to be Embiid. It's got to be Maxey. And then you're just not left with too many other options. So this is a big blow for the Sixers. Fortunately, Atlanta is making this more of a series than it really should be. But yeah, I think that's concerning, and that's definitely a situation we're going to have to monitor in the second round.
Yeah, but we can just move on because
Yeah.
Sixers is not important talk yet. I'm sure we'll talk about it on the next pod once we find out who they'll be playing. But let's move on to one of the more exciting series, and I think probably the most shocking so far, which is the Knicks beating the Cavs in 5 games. This series closed out tonight. Julius Randle did get injured. He left the game with an ankle injury, just a, I believe an ankle sprain, but nothing too serious. So he'll be back up by the next series. For sure.
Yeah.
But this is just wild because this is a series that almost everyone had going to either 7 games or the Cavs winning out. I think there were some people who had the Knicks, but this was definitely a very heavily Cavs favorite series. And I think for a lot of
Definitely.
good reasons.
I think me and you both had the Cavs winning this one in six.
I had them in 7. I thought this was going to be close. But regardless, that's very far off from, the Knicks winning in 5.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Knicks really just dismantled the Cavs in this series. Honestly, like they were the better team in pretty much every single game this series, apart from game two. They dominated the glass, which is something I never thought I would say when Cleveland is a team that runs that twin tower lineup of Evan Mobley and Jarrett Allen. They outshot Cleveland. They just out hustled them. They just looked like the team that had more composure and had been there before, even though they're not that experienced a team.
Yeah.
We were more physical, and I have serious concerns about this Cavs roster construction after seeing this team in the playoffs. I think I personally very much overvalued Donovan Mitchell and how he would transform this team, because there are some very serious problems with this team, but what were your overall thoughts on the series?
Yeah, like you said, the rebounding was shocking. Shout out to Mitchell Robinson because he
Yeah,
had some
definitely.
great offensive rebounding games. I believe in this game he had 18 rebounds, 7 offensive rebounds, which is incredible when you're talking about going against a very center-heavy team, a very defense-heavy team. So I thought that was going to be the strong suit of the Cavaliers, and I think they used that against them, like the slow feet. Jalen Brunson really dismantled them. He was definitely the star in the series.
Oh yeah.
But I'm going to give my flowers to RJ Barrett because he had some
Yeah.
bounce back games. He
100%.
had some efficient games. He shot 7 of 13, 21 points tonight, the highest plus minus on the team with a plus minus of 21. So he definitely had a great game. And if you get games like this from RJ Barrett, where he doesn't have to be the all-star, he doesn't have to be the best guy on the court, but if you get a consistent, solid role player out of RJ Barrett, this team is a very transformed team.
Definitely, because Barrett, he's a good defender. If he's able to just knock down a couple threes, get a couple layups in, a couple drives to the basket, and just play his role. Like, the Knicks are a very, very solid team. And then you have, like, obviously Jalen Brunson. You mentioned him. He was by far and away the best player of this series. Like, just doing it all, hitting big time threes, pulling up in the mid range, getting to the line. Like, he was doing it all. Randall was a bit more iffy. I think I want to say it was game four. He was like terrible. Like, he had a really bad game. But fortunately, other guys in this Knicks team stepped up. Mitchell Robinson is a guy that, was really dominating on both ends of the floor over Allen, over Mobley. He was the best center in this series. And I also want to credit Josh Hart. I mean, we continually talk about this guy and how he's so valuable, even though he doesn't put up the big numbers, but just everything he does, from rebounding to playmaking to just getting those 50-50 balls, those hustle plays, those are what win you series. And also, like, he did a good job guarding, the other team's wings. And I want to talk about the Cavs wings real quick and also get your thoughts on this, because this, in my opinion, was maybe the biggest, like, struggle for the Cavs in just their roster. They just had no wings. Like, they had to cycle between Okoro, who can't shoot, LeVert, who can't really defend and was struggling on the offensive end as is, Osman, who's just not that good of a player, and they were even running Danny Green out there because they just didn't have that many wings. And, like, that's concerning. And then also Jared Allen and Evan Mobley just looked completely outmatched in this series. Like, they did not seem to play up to the physicality of the playoffs. They continually were out rebounded by smaller guys.
And they
And
also had no offensive production. I mean, you
oh
have to
yeah,
talk about
I just want
you
to ask you the
expect.
question really quick. Like, does this make you worried about, like, Cleveland's future, or is this just, like, you think a natural step in the growing process?
I lean more towards this is a natural step in the growing process. We don't need to over-exaggerate this because, put it this way, the Knicks have been with this roster construction for 3 to 4 years now, and they've retooled a little bit, adding guys like Josh Hart, Emmanuel quickly has become a part of rotation, but and Jalen Brunson obviously is a big change. But you have Julius Randle, Mitchell Robinson, RJ Barrett. Those three have been there consistently. Obi Toppin has been there for a little while as well. So when you have a consistent core who knows their game, who've been in the postseason, I mean, you have to talk about that run. They had that series against the Hawks. They've been in this position, whereas the Cavs are very new. Evan Mobley's super young. Jarrett Allen has limited playoff experience. He had some time in Brooklyn. Donovan Mitchell, he played well in some games, but I expected more consistency from him. I was surprised at
Yes,
some points,
100%.
and because he's been one of the best playoff performers in history, historically speaking. And Darius Garland also really disappointed me in this, especially in this game. He had 6 turnovers and 4 assists. That's just horrible. But you also have to attribute that to the defensive pressure that Josh Hart, that RJ Barrett, that Emmanuel quickly put on him. So I got to give my props to the Knicks, but also we can't over exaggerate what the Cavs, loss in the first round means for next year. I think maybe retool, focus on getting maybe a little bit more of a well-rounded wing, and that can be hard, but maybe you can package some of the wings you
I
currently
thought of a
have.
guy. I thought of a guy. Imagine if this team had a guy like Jeremy Grant.
Yeah,
How good that would
that
be.
would be great. Somebody who's not necessarily a specialist. They need a generalist is really what they need. And somebody maybe with also a little bit of a veteran head, because we this team initially had Kevin Love, and yeah, he's not really going to give you great production or anything.
Yeah, I mean, he's
But
starting in this
yeah,
heat.
exactly. He is starting for this Heat team, and look where the Heat are right now. I think the big reason they brought Danny Green is, yes, they needed somebody to be a wing, but realistically, he wasn't going to get any minutes when they, or at least they thought they were just bringing him for the experience he had winning 4 rings, very different teams, and playing with some of the best players and with a level head. I think they need one of those guys who can give them real production.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, because at a certain point, they started actually relying on Danny Green. Like, he was the first guy off the bench, and you're not going to make it very far if 36-year-old Danny Green is going to be your sixth man. But I'm excited to see this next round matchup, like, whoever the Knicks play, because, Madison Square Garden was absolutely rocking this series, and it's just such great energy when the Knicks are good and making it deep in the playoffs. But let's move on to talk about the next series. This one is also a lot less close than we thought, but due to injuries. And that was the Suns Clippers series. The Suns ended up taking this one pretty easily in five. Was not really too close, because from I think game three onward, Kawhi didn't play.
Correct.
And you're missing Kawhi Leonard, you're missing Paul George. That's obviously not going to be a very competitive series. I want to get your opinion on how you think the Clippers' future plays out from here, and also what you think this series means for Russell Westbrook, because he had a very good bounce back series here.
I'll start with the Russell Westbrook thing. I've been a big proponent of this since Russell Westbrook has been receiving all this hate. Russ is no different than he was 3 years ago. I think maybe he's lost a little bit of a step. Maybe he's slightly less efficient. He's getting older. You expect that. But this like cliff that people think he fell off of because of the Lakers, it's just not really true. I think that Russell Westbrook is going to struggle playing with a guy like LeBron James because their play styles do not match at all. And putting him in the spotlight of Los Angeles playing with LeBron James is going to make people see his flaws more. And I don't think that the hate he received was deserved. And I think the series showed Russ is Russ. He can still go out there, be the number one guy, get you 36, 8, and 11, and lose a playoff series in the first round. And that's what Russ has done for his career. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's who he is. Should he go out and get a Supermax contract? Hell no. But do I think Russell Westbrook can contribute to meaningful basketball as the number two or three player on a team, such as the Clippers, if you have a healthy roster? Absolutely. And I think if you have even just Kawhi Leonard without Paul George, this series is so different. And, I think we could be talking about Kawhi Leonard in the same conversation, the same breath as the what if of like a Derrick Rose, the what if of an I always mix them up. Is it
Brandon
Greg
Roy.
Oden? I was gonna say, is Greg Oden the one who got injured, or was that Anthony Bennett?
I mean, Greg Oden got injured, but I was thinking more like Brandon
Yeah,
Roy.
or like
But
a Brandon Roy, that's a good example, or like a Penny Hardaway. We could be talking about him in that kind of conversation, because Kawhi has been a player to end dynasties. He ended the Miami Heat Big Three. He ended the Golden State era. And but his body's just made of glass. I mean, like, way more than we talk. Like, we joke about Anthony Davis, but his body actually has a medical condition that's been diagnosed. So it's really unfortunate to see. But I don't know where the Clippers go from here. This is really hard. As far as the salary goes, I'm pretty sure next season they still have Kawhi and Paul George on the books. So this obviously is not going to work. You've seen this year after year. This is just a cursed franchise. They can't stay healthy. And that's gone back not to just like Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, but Lob City. It's just always been the injuries that took this team down. And they have so much invested in this. I mean, think of about the that trade for Paul George, the Shea, the picks that went out. I mean, they just have so much invested in this that they need to at least get something out of it before it just falls apart.
Yeah, it's honestly, it seems like it's the same story every single time with the Clippers. Like, oh, well, when they're healthy and Kawhi and PG are playing together, they're going to win the championship, but they just never do. In the 1 year that they did, let's not forget, in 2020, Kawhi and PG were both healthy and they both played the whole playoffs, and they blew a 3-1 lead to the Denver Nuggets. So at a certain point, if you're Steve Ballmer, if you're the Clippers front office, you have to come to the realization that this simply isn't working, and you need to make the necessary changes because, as you said, so much was invested in this, right? That you can't just basically say, all right, we're going to start from scratch. You have to try and retool this roster, in my opinion, because there are still so many good pieces. I think this is still the deepest team in the NBA. They have the best bench, in my opinion, in terms of talent across the board. Great pickups across at the deadline, getting Bones Highland, getting Mason Plumlee. But, maybe you try moving Kawhi and just building around PG and Russ. Maybe you trade PG. Maybe you got to try something. You got to try something new and give this another shot, but with a different look. If you try running it back again, then that's just begging for disaster. And in the Russell Westbrook point, I'll say this. I have not been the biggest proponent of Russell Westbrook this season. I think that, in my opinion, he doesn't really contribute to winning basketball. I think, especially in the playoffs, his style of play is very conducive to just losing. His high rates of turnovers, like the shot selection, it just leads to losing games, which loses series. I'll say he had a great series this series. It didn't translate to a win, as you said,
Well,
but
we
I
can be
think
talking about the fact that he did make winning plays. There were
he did
many
make
times in
winning
the
plays.
series where he made winning plays,
He did make
and there
winning
were
plays.
games where he kept it close all by himself against the big three or quote unquote big four of the Phoenix Suns.
He did, and I'll admit it. Like, I think what comes to mind is that I think it was actually in game one, was it not? Where he had that block against Devin Booker to basically seal the game, and he dominated that fourth quarter. That was all Russell Westbrook. But I will say that to say this is like somehow on the Lakers, like I've seen this discourse a lot on Twitter, like, oh, the Lakers ruined Russ. Let's see what
It
he
has
does
nothing to
to
do with the
himself.
Lakers.
I agree. I think that Russ genuinely was terrible on the Lakers. And I think obviously a big part of that is on Russ. The fit didn't work, which is that's the part that the Lakers can be blamed for about the fit, about just how all the pieces would connect. But Russ was not good on the Lakers. And this revisionist history of like, oh, Russ was always a solid player. It's just the Lakers didn't use him right. That's just a dialogue that has to die, in my
Well,
opinion.
you could make the argument that the Lakers didn't use him right, but that's not necessarily the fault of any coach or anyone in particular. It's just the fact that it's impossible or almost impossible to utilize LeBron James and Russell Westbrook together.
That's okay. That's, I guess, a better way to put it. But yeah, no, I agree with you there.
And
Pivoting
I
slightly to
was
the Suns, or yeah,
sorry,
go ahead.
I was just going to say one more thing. Not only did Russell Westbrook keep the games close and like game one win the game, but even by himself, Norman Powell did have 42 points. I will make it clear it wasn't just Russell Westbrook, but it was a 5-point loss in game three. It wasn't like they got massively blown out. So there was very high potential for a win in that game. And also, before we move on to the Suns, I want to get your thought on one more thing. And that's about Tyronn Lue. Not just his future with this franchise, but I feel like he's been kind of the odd man out in a lot of ways because he's just never in the loop. I don't know if you heard this news, but Tyronn Lue didn't know that Kawhi Leonard wasn't playing in game three until 4 hours before the game.
That's unbelievable. I didn't actually know that. I mean, yeah, just I've heard a lot of stories though about Tyronn Lue and like about his future with the Clippers. In my opinion, he's still one of the best coaches in the association, excuse me. I think that, his adjustments, his ability to change the rotations to match a certain opponent, his ability to switch up and draw up plays to fit the moment. Like, I think he's one of the best, like, sort of pure X's and O's kind of coaches in the league. And also, I think he knows how to manage big egos and big personnel, as we saw when he coached LeBron, as we saw with this Clippers team. But at a certain point, if you're going for an entirely fresh look, you might have to try, like retooling even the coaching staff. If you trade a Kawhi Leonard, a Paul George, and you package him with like, I don't know, a Norman Powell, and you get like another star, superstar player in return, Maybe you think, all right, here's where we try to go after a guy like Nick Nurse, who's now on the market, or bring in a guy, a trusted coach like Kenny Atkinson, who's been, out of a head coaching job for a while. Even maybe like a Frank Vogel. Like, that is not something out of the question, in my opinion.
And
Do I
we could see a guy like Tyronn Lue go to a team like the Sixers, who, if they don't find success again, Doc Rivers is probably the one who's going to get cut.
Yeah, so I'm thinking like his future is like very tenuous right now, but I think it's the Clippers got to go all in if they're making changes, and I guess Tyronn Lue has to go as well. Let's pivot to talk about the Suns here. Do you feel like, because you picked them to be your championship winner, do you feel more confident in that pick, or are you starting to have reservations after seeing how they played this series?
I'll take a few more reservations than I had initially. I thought they were going to be more dominant than they were. I think the f not necessarily the fit, but my biggest concern is that it's just Devin Booker and Kevin Durant need to be hitting all their shots efficiently for this team to be winning. And while I believe that in four out of si seven games they can do that, it's not something you want to have to rely on solely.
Yeah, this team is honestly a little bit reminiscent of the Brooklyn Nets. Like, how is this that different from Kyrie and KD just like kind of taking turns dominating the offense, except just replace Kyrie with D Book? Chris Paul at this point in his career is not a star player. He's a guy who can get you a couple big time shots, but I think he does most of his work when you're already up. I think he's a bit of a front runner at this point in his career. And on defense, like, he's like really fallen off a cliff on that end of the floor. Ayton is incredibly soft as a player. I don't think he can dominate games. And I think that, if he goes against an elite big man, a Nikola Jokic, which we're going to see in the next round, I think that's where Ayton is going to really get exposed. So, and then like you mentioned, this team has really no bench, no real depth. Like, they're like giving Torrey Craig big minutes, and like he has to have a significant role in the offense. So honestly, I might even have the Nuggets beating them in the next round. Like, I
Yeah,
don't think that's part of the question.
if you want, we can just start talking about this Suns Nuggets series
Yeah, let's
because
do
we
it.
were going to talk about it later. I could see the Nuggets winning the series off of an incredible Jokic performance, but I could also see this going exactly the opposite way. Kevin Durant is going to have pretty much no competition on the defensive side. I mean, like, who's going to be defending him? Michael Porter Jr. Like, that's a joke. He doesn't play defense, and your center is
Aaron Gordon.
Jokic.
I'm gonna have Aaron Gordon on there.
Okay, then you probably have KCP on
Oh,
Devin Booker.
yeah.
Yeah. And I just don't think that's enough firepower on your defensive end to hold back Kevin Durant and Devin Booker for four out of seven games.
Okay, I got a question for you. If you want to go by matchups, you're gonna have DeAndre Ayton on Nikola Jokic. That
Correct.
is barbecue chicken for Nikola Jokic. He's
Oh,
gonna
I agree.
series. And then you have Chris Paul, who is
On Jamal Murray.
respectfully a cone at this point on defense now,
Yeah.
on Jamal Murray. So, like, we know what Murray can do in the playoffs, right? And we even saw it in this series against the Timberwolves. He had some incredible games. So I think Murray's going to be having a great series. And I think that Jokic as well, they can match the sort of flamethrower energy that we're going to get from D-Book and KD.
I could agree with that. I think that the way Nikola Jokic dominates a game is very different than the way a Kevin Durant or Devin Booker would dominate the game, in the sense that he's more so getting his role players into the game and f feeling the flow a little more of it in l less forceful nature. But and
So,
I think
yeah.
historically speaking, that has come back to bite him in the postseason.
I agree with that. But I don't know. I just think that the Nuggets overall, they're overall, I think it's very clear the Nuggets are the more well-rounded, solid team. I think, they just have more depth. I think they're better coached. I think their star is like, they play a much more fluid form of basketball, where more guys touch the ball. The offense doesn't have to rely on just a couple guys scoring the basketball. And so, honestly, I think that my heart is saying that the Nuggets are going to take this one, but my brain, actually, it might be the opposite way around. My brain is telling me the Nuggets logically should win the series in like six games. But then like something about my basketball purist mind is just like Booker's gonna have 40, KD's gonna have 40, Aiden's gonna have 20-20 games, and the Nuggets are gonna lose this one.
I
So
don't think Ayton is going to be the factor in this game or in this series. It's really going to be. I hate to boil it down to as it's simple as Kevin Durant and Devin Booker hitting their shots, but I think that's how simple the Suns' plan is. And that's so similar to what you were saying in Brooklyn. The plan for Brooklyn wasn't like there's a real game plan. It's kind of just like, well, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, you know, we expect you to hit your shots, and that's about it.
yeah.
And
So
then. So I feel like this is a game of like an actual mind, a team with an actual game plan in the Nuggets. And that's not to say the Suns aren't going to have a game plan, but like their schemes are going to be a lot simpler, which is going to be easier to predict for the Nuggets.
okay. Let's get down to, putting some predictions down. Who do you have in the series and how many games?
I'm going to stick to my son's pick. And since they're the lower seed, I'm going to take them in six.
I'm honestly, I guess I'm gonna have to go with the Nuggets because, we gotta have some disagreement here. But also, I just genuinely think that the Nuggets, like, they're always a surprise team in the playoffs. I think that they're, like, when they're healthy, people tend to underrate them a little bit.
I
I think
agree.
back to 2020 when you had the fully healthy Clippers team going up 3-1 against the Nuggets. And the Nuggets just put their head down, battled back, and won that series in seven. And so I expect Nikola Jokic is going to have a very dominant series. I expect Jamal Murray is going to have some 40, maybe even 50-point games. And yeah, I think this one might be the Nuggets in six. I'm going to go Nuggets in six.
Yeah, okay. That's fair. So we just have opposite teams in six. And since we're already on the topic of Nuggets, let's just go back backtrack a little bit to the series they had against the Timberwolves. I don't think we need to talk too much about this one, but one thing of notoriety I want to talk about, well, Anthony Edwards had a great series. This was a big bounce back after that the horrible play-in games that he had. I think he averaged like 30 or like not pretty close to 30 points per game. Pretty good
Yeah.
efficiency, and he looked like the best player on the floor at any given time,
Yes.
for this Timberwolves team. But I don't know if you knew about this. After game five in the loss, Anthony Edwards threw a chair around. I don't know if it was in the locker room or off on the
I
bench.
you didn't see the video?
I didn't see the video of it. I just
Okay.
read the news on it.
It's an absolutely absurd, like, exaggeration, in my opinion, for him to be getting sued over assault. He's frustrated. He just missed the potential game tying shot, and he just, like, kind of throws a chair to the side, and it, like, glances at some, like, a couple bystanders. But it's not that serious, and the fact that it's an assault case is just basically, like, in my opinion, it's just a couple, like, idiots trying to make some money off of, a
Yeah,
fantasy
that's what I'd
basketball
read.
player. It's ridiculous. So, like, I hope he's able to, like, overcome these, like, legal troubles, but that's so stupid and really just honestly so annoying.
That kind of reminds me of, do you remember when LeBron James like posted a photo of himself on his social media and then the photographer who took the photo tried to sue LeBron James for using his photo without paying for using the photo?
Yeah, I mean, just people at any moment they're gonna try to, like, make a quick buck. So, like, sucks that Ant has to go through this, especially because, as you said, he had an amazing playoff series. I feel terrible for him. I think that, like, I wish that we saw the Nuggets, or sorry, the Timberwolves at least having a healthy roster. I think Jaden McDaniels and Naz Reid would have made this series a lot more competitive. But yeah, man, I think this Rudy Gobert trade was really, like, a disaster on all fronts, because think how much they gave up for that.
I wanted to ask you as well. Last year, Anthony Edwards also had quite an incredible postseason run, and we thought this is his breakout postseason. He's going to be incredible next year. This is his all-star year. And yeah, Anthony Edwards did have a better year. I forget, was he an all-star this year?
Anthony Edwards?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, he was an all-star this year. But I didn't feel like this was like the breakout quote-unquote season we were expecting from him. Do you think that there's a jump to be made still, or do you think we're going to see him kind of regress back to what we saw this regular season?
I mean, honestly, I think that Anthony Edwards had a very good season. I think that like it's hard. I think I'm pretty sure like just from the eye test, he's improved every single season. I think that one part of his game that kind of has gone under the radar is his defense. Like Anthony Edwards came into the league as a guy who was always talked about as having a very well-developed, explosive offensive game, but a pretty lazy and low motor on the defensive end, but he's really upped himself on that end of the floor. He's really taking pride in being a two-way player. And so I think that's where he can elevate his game. I think he can get to a level of like a Paul George at some point in his career where he's just an elite two-way kind of guy if he continues improving on that end of the floor. So I think like scoring wise, he's going to keep getting better. He'll go like 23 points per game, 25 points per game, like those slow increments. But I think the biggest jump he can make is on the defensive end of the floor.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. All right, from there, I think we can move on to the next series. I want to talk about this Warriors series,
For
Warriors
sure.
Kings.
It's ongoing right now.
Yeah, right now, end of the first quarter, I think it's 36-33 in favor of the Kings. Last time I checked, the Kings were up by 11, so the Warriors must have made a push.
Yeah.
But I think this is going to be a very key game in this series, considering it's all tied up at 2-2 right now. Last time we were on the pod, the Kings were up 2-0. The Warriors took home, took care of business at home, and now they're trying to get a dub on the road. They took care of business without Draymond Green, and I think the most interesting part of the series is the fact that Draymond Green has been coming off the bench, and it's been working, and he's been very willing to do so. And Steve Kerr has talked very highly of him, and his teammates have. So, what do you think you have been seeing from this Warriors team that's been different from the first two games, and what do you think of Draymond coming off the bench?
I mean, they're just playing with a little bit more desperation. I think that, the energy is different. I think that they're like hitting their shots, honestly. Like, I'm seeing more out of guys like Jordan Poole at home. I really like it's very hard to say why the Warriors are such a different team on the road than at home. I think that to a certain extent, it's also the Kings, like, just not being the same team in Oracle as when they're back home in Sacramento. Like you see when it comes to crunch time, like guys are making careless mistakes, they're turning the ball over, they're missing shots. De'Aaron Fox doesn't have that problem because he is the clutch player of the year and deservedly so. But we saw at the end of that game, Harrison Barnes wide open three to win the game, go up 3-1 in the series, and he missed it. Wide open shot. You don't get a better look than that. And I think that's partly just due to being the on the road in the playoff atmosphere. And I think that the Warriors have been there time and time again. So they thrive off that energy from the crowd. They know how to play physical at home. They just are more comfortable at home. And they are able to sort of use that against the Kings. I don't know how like that translates to their road performance. I think that the Kings are also very comfortable at home. But yeah, it's kind of tough to say overall. Like, what would you think?
Yeah, I think we've talked about this before, and this is very consistent with the Warriors' story this entire season. The best team out at home and the worst team on the road,
Yeah.
and that's continuing to show true. If they lose this game tonight in Sacramento, I would not be surprised to see them win Game 6 and then lose Game 7. I think this pattern is going to be a very hard one to break because it's just been so consistent this entire season. I'm indifferent as to who wins in the series. I think either storyline would be really cool for the next round if the Lakers win, like LeBron versus Steph or like the Kings versus the Lakers. Both awesome storylines. Cr crossing my fingers the Lakers win, but we're talking about the Kings Warriors or yeah, the Kings Warriors right now. Like you're saying, it's hard to really pinpoint specific details about what makes each team or specifically the Warriors so bad on the road. I think the consistency of Jordan Poole has been a big issue for them, and he's definitely looked more comfortable at home. Steph Curry has just been a beast this series. Every single night, he's really looking like, MVP level talent.
I have a question. Who do you think has been better in this series, Fox or Curry?
Steph. No question in my mind that
No
Steph.
question.
Yeah. I think it's not like as close as I just made it sound. Or it's closer than I made it sound. Sorry. But I think Stephen Curry is just a more efficient player. De'Aaron Fox is averaging 27-5-6, and Steph is averaging 26-4-4. I don't think
Chill
numbers
out.
tell you.
Fox is averaging like 31-7-6.
I see him averaging 21-5-6 according to the NBA playoffs.
Not
But
averaging 21 points.
it's
That's ridiculous.
27. Sorry, did I say 21?
Yeah, okay. That
Okay, 27. My apologies.
regardless, I mean, just from
Yeah.
the eye test, I think that Fox has taken over these games a lot more. And I think that, like, come fourth quarter, he's the guy who has the ball in his hands. He's making plays. He's hitting big time threes. He's getting to his spots in the mid range. I think that Curry, like, he's been great, but you can't forget he missed the potential game tying shot in game one. He had that costly turnover that almost cost them game four. He's
Yeah,
made some really,
that game four was bad.
he's made some pretty big time mistakes, like very like uncharacteristic for a guy like that. And so I would say that Fox like somehow has looked like the more composed, like veteran guy in the playoffs so far.
I will say he's looked a little more composed, but I think the weight that Steph Curry carries whenever he's on the floor, when the work he makes the defense do by just running around and existing is more than De'Aaron Fox will ever be able to do. I just think that the focus that has to be provided to Steph Curry, the how much he tires out the opposing team and the defensive presence in the battle and the fight he still is able to provide is just an overall larger impact than De'Aaron Fox. And I think the eye test from, like, I wouldn't say necessarily like a casual standpoint, but I think like when you just watch a game initially, you see that first look, you go, wow, De'Aaron Fox is controlling the series. I think then you get that second look, you start to look what's actually going on the floor, and you look at Steph Curry run around, all these screens, these plays that they run, where the eyes are of the defense, and you say, wow, the impact that Steph Curry has isn't just something that you see when he has the ball in his hands. It happens way more than you think. It's happening every second he's in the game.
All right, we can agree to disagree on that one. I guess, like, because I picked, like, when we first started talking about the series and Kings were up, I think 2-0, I picked the Kings again to win this one in
And I
seven.
picked the Warriors in six.
So,
I or did you not remember I had the Warriors in six and you called me
yeah.
crazy. If the Warriors win tonight, that's not a bad pick.
No, I mean, I didn't call you crazy. Obviously, we
No.
know that
Yeah.
the defending champs, so we're going to
Yeah.
defend our court.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask, who do you think are the two X factors for each team, like that you think can really be difference makers in this series?
Ooh, that's tough. I think I'm gonna have to say the X factor for the Kings is probably someone a little unexpected. I'm actually gonna pick between two guys. I think it's either Malik Monk or Keegan Murray. I think it's one of them two has to really step up and just be a flamethrower, like we've seen in Malik Monk in the first two games of the series, and we're actually seeing Keegan Murray tonight. Keegan is 4 of 5 from the field, has 10 points already, just in the first quarter, so he's playing very well. So I think that's what matters to this Kings team. They need one extra guy to step up on offense. And then for the Warriors team, I'm gonna go ahead and say Jordan Poole. I think I already sort of mentioned it earlier, but I think having that third splash brother, that third player who brings that gravity, is so important to this Warriors offense.
I totally agree with you there. I want to highlight two more guys because I think you hit it right on the money for both teams. For the Warriors, I want to say Kevon Looney. I think, being the primary guy who's defending Domantas Sabonis, he has a lot on his plate, especially because they play Sabonis in single coverage, so he doesn't have a double team there. It's just one-on-one, and he's been doing a great job so far of limiting his presence. And then for the Kings, it's kind of an unexpected guy as well. I want to say Kevin Huerter. I think that he's had a very, very quiet series. Maybe the lights of the playoffs are a little bit too bright for him. But I think that, he was a big part to why Sacramento was one of the best three-point shooting teams in the league. And so they're going to need his shooting at some point because, he's getting minutes out there. He's a big part of their rotation. I'm pretty sure he even starts. And so, like, you're going to want him to start knocking these down. And if he does, that's going to be a big difference maker for Sacramento. And with that, I guess we can move on to talk about the next series if you don't have anything to add.
Yeah, go ahead.
So let's talk about this Hawks Boston Celtics series because this one is now 3-2 when, we were calling this a sweep. We said, the Hawks are a bit of a joke. Like, what are they doing? But I guess we continually underrate the Hawks a little bit, I guess, because they ended up winning a big game five in Boston without DeJounte Murray. That was a very impressive win. And Trae Young had a phenomenal game. You know, he hit big threes in crunch time, including like the game-winning three at the end of the fourth quarter. And so yeah, I mean, what have you seen from the Hawks? Like, do you think they have a legitimate chance of winning the series?
Look, if I had to give the Hawks like a percentage, I'd give them like 15%, like which is a lot higher than I would have given them before. And
Okay.
I think that the Trae Young we saw last night was 2021 Trae Young. The Trae Young that we've been waiting for, the Trae Young that the Hawks have needed, this efficient guy who is arguably one the best passer in the league at the point guard position. You know, 38-13. That's an incredible performance. Kind of carrying his team to the win because he put up almost all the production in a different way. But I'm gonna call it compare it to like a Jimmy Butler-esque, like you know, playoff Jimmy kind of way. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
It's not to the same extent, but I think there's some of that in that style of game. And I don't think anybody else on this team has stepped up to the plate. And that's why I give them such a low chance of winning, because I think if Trae Young can repeat a performance like that, even if he does, it took a buzzer beater or like, you know, the coldest shot of the game to be able to win. And I think if a guy like John Collins, who we're going to talk about in a second, doesn't step up, if none of your role players, if I'm blanking on some role players right now, but like if Clint Capella isn't,
DeAndre Hunter.
yeah, DeAndre Hunter and Onyeka Okongwu, like if your guys just aren't stepping up to the challenge, then there's nothing DeJounte or there's nothing Trae can really do. And DeJounte will be coming back next game, but I think he's also been slightly underwhelming, so it's kind of tough. And also, with that being said, DeJounte coming back, Trae Young is going to have the ball in his hands a little bit less than he would have in this game, so that could also affect the dynamic of how he's able to get into his flow. But getting back to that John Collins statement, let's talk about his performances so far. In game one, he had 5 points on 1 of 9 from the field. Game two, he's 8 points on 3 of 7. Game three, he's 5 points on 2 of 11. And this past game four, or sorry, no, this was 2 games ago. Game four was 12 points on 5 of 7. How are you getting this kind of production out of John Collins, the guy who's supposed to be your third best player, the guy you were going to pay like a max contract to?
Yeah, and I mean, like, I'll give him credit because, like, conveniently, I guess, like, you know, the stats we put forgot about game five last night, where he put up 22 points, like 9 for 18 shooting, 2 rebounds, which is kind of crazy. Like, the fact you're almost like 7 foot, you're 6'9", and you can't get more than 2 rebounds is kind of crazy to me. But yeah, no, I've been thoroughly let down by John Collins. I've been saying he needs to go for a while. Like, I think he's one of those players that is not really happy in a situation and would really thrive being in some new threads, being in a new environment. It just doesn't
Maybe
seem.
like a Charlotte, like even like if it's not a good team, just a team where his production is valuable.
Yeah, I could see him in a Charlotte. I could see him in a Washington, like a team like that, where he could really just kind of thrive and be free. I just don't know if the Trae Young, John Collins things works anymore, especially because I think Trae Young, kind of thrives much more alongside Clint Capella. Not saying they're mutually exclusive, but what that basically does is John Collins becomes a 3-point shooter, which, in my opinion, is not the strongest part of his game. I think John Collins is a rim runner. He's a guy who thrives like catching lobs. He has a very similar game to Clint Capella, despite the fact he's a little undersized. But he just doesn't get to play that way on this team. So I still have hope for John Collins as a basketball player. I just don't think he's going to really do that in Atlanta. I mean, I'm happy he had a good game last game, but yeah, I think he's going to need a repeat performance of that, if they're going to want to win this one and take it to seven. But I also think that DeJounte Murray, and honestly, as you said, the role players are going to have to help. And just honestly, like, the role players are going to have to knock down their shots because Trae Young is going to find them. He is putting up some like video game assist numbers. Like you said, he had 13 assists last game. Game four, he had 15 assists. You just got to knock down those shots when Trae Young finds you with the ball. And the Hawks have a real chance at this series.
I wanted to talk about John Collins a little bit and come to his defense a little bit. I was looking at a list of players in the playoffs so far with the best defensive rating. And to be fair, this isn't a sample size of like 4 to 5 games, but John Collins had, I think, the fourth best defensive rating in the entire postseason at like 99.6, which is a very, very good. And like that's better than a guy like Anthony Davis. Obviously, I'm not saying John Collins is a better defender than Anthony Davis in the postseason, because I think Anthony Davis has by far and away been the best defender in this postseason. But he was up there with some elite company, in guys like as well as Jared Vanderbilt. Emmanuel Quickley was on the list. Josh Hart was on the list. Isaac Okoro was on this list. So as far as when you think of good defenders, John Collins has been putting in the work on that end, and it might not be showing up in his numbers or like in the blocks, but he has been doing a good job on defense.
Fair enough. And yeah, I'll give him credit there. Kind of on that note, like, do you think that Boston's struggles, like the fact that they haven't been able to close out this series yet, is more mainly due to the Hawks like starting to really find the rhythm and play well, or Boston really faltering and stumbling here?
I think it's a little bit of both, but I'm gonna go more so with the Hawks finding their way. I think this has been a team similar to Chicago all year, where they've had games, they've had moments where they look like that kind of not even a contender, but just a really elite team, and they just can't keep it consistent. And when they find those little keys, it works really well for them for those few stretches. And I think it's hard for the Boston, especially being up at that point 3-1 in the series, to match the desperation of a team who's down, coming into Boston and saying, we need to win this game, we don't have a choice. Whereas, Boston could be a little more lazy and say, well, we're up 3-1, we can close down our home court now, let's take a break, let's go get some rest before this next series. And it's just a very hard mindset to match the energy of the other team with.
I agree with that. And I mean, I think that Boston is going to win this series. They might do it in seven, but I mean, they're definitively the better team here on both ends of the floor. I just think that, the real winner of this series is honestly the Philadelphia 76ers, like getting that rest time for Joel Embiid, for him to heal. James Harden gets to heal that like hamstring that he's been bothered with. I think that they're enjoying this. And I think that honestly, for anything, the Hawks, the fact that they're making this competitive, they can kind of like just be at least okay with the fact that the DeJounte Murray trade like wasn't a complete failure. Like they do have potential with these two together. They might just need to like move some pieces around, like John Collins, like and try to find a different fit. But with that being said, yeah, I'm gonna stick with Boston winning this one, and I'm gonna go with six. I think they're gonna win the next game.
Yeah. Nice.
You agree?
I don't know. I don't think Jason Tatum's gonna shoot 1 for 10 again, like from three.
Yeah.
That's pretty rough. And I mean, he had a really bad game, and the Hawks only won by one. So I probably have to agree with you that they'll win in six. One last thing to talk about the Celtics. What do you think of Grant Williams being a DNP coach's decision? Because I feel like he was definitely a key component of their run last year, and he just has not really been seeing minutes in the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like I haven't really like been able to watch too much of Boston's postseason because in my opinion, this like I thought that the series would be over every single game. So I'm like, why would I watch this series, But I think that Grant Williams slowly throughout the year, when I've watched Boston during the regular season, he's slowly crept his way out of the rotation. Like, I think that Joe Mazzulla has given him a less and less big role over time. His shooting has kind of fallen off a cliff and his defense is not like elite. I think that he makes too many mistakes on the offensive end for him to really be an effective piece on a championship team. Like he just turns the ball over and he doesn't have a great handle on the ball. So like honestly, I think it works for them. I think they have other pieces like Malcolm Brogdon is taking up those minutes. He wasn't a guy that the Celtics had last year. even a guy like Pritchard, like they might want to give him more run instead of Williams. So not crazy. Like, don't think it's a crazy decision by the Boston coaching staff. But let's talk about the last series in the East that we haven't talked about. And this one is also immensely surprising. The Miami Heat are currently up 3-1 against the Milwaukee Bucks. This is a team I had winning the championship, and the Heat are like about to eliminate them. If I check the score really quick, because they're playing right now,
It's 56-59, I believe. Or,
63-60.
okay, 63-69. Okay. Yeah, but I will say, I think me having the, or both of us having the Heat to beat Boston in seven is looking like a pretty damn good pick now.
Yeah, honestly, we people sleep on the Miami Heat, but we did not. We knew that playoff Jimmy was him. But
Yes,
guess
we knew he
what?
was coming.
Playoff Jimmy is real. Every single postseason, this guy comes out and he looks like the best player on the planet. He, in a pivotal game four, or yeah, in a pivotal game four against the best defense in the NBA, against what the NBA players consider, we talked about that internal poll, the best individual defender, Jrue Holiday. He put up 56 points, 9 rebounds, 2 assists, and a block to just win that game at home and put them up 3-1. I mean, what do you have to say about playoff Jimmy, Hunter?
Yeah, I saw a stat and a YouTube video I watched today. I don't know if you watched the same one.
From Swish Out?
So the stat, for those of you who don't watch Swish Out, said that last postseason, Jimmy Butler averaged 6 points per game more per game in the postseason than he did in the regular season, which was by far and away more than any other player in the league. This postseason, obviously, smaller sample size, Jimmy Butler is averaging 13 more points per game than he did during the regular season. And that's like 9 points per game higher than any other player. So, like, playoff Jimmy is definitely a real thing. He talked about in a media performance after this 56 point performance that he really only started trying after the All-Star break and that he coasts during the regular season. And that makes a lot of sense. I feel like, especially now more than ever, players kind of find their way to load manage through seasons and like care less and less about the regular season and just care about the postseason, especially with this ring culture that's sort of developed. And Jimmy Butler really is that guy. He's very, incredible. And watching this game was so crazy because like I watched it live and the Bucks were winning by nine. I thought this was over. I thought it was like, oh, the series is gonna be 2-2. And out of nowhere, Jimmy Butler just starts hitting these like crazy shot after crazy shot, and then dagger and steal, and just great defense and forcing turnovers. It was incredible to watch. And there was a play where Jimmy Butler had already hit a few shots, and to take the dagger with 17 seconds left in the clock, he just shoots a three. And I'm like, Jimmy, what are you doing? There's 17 seconds left in the clock. You're up, and he just hit it. And I was like, that's just crazy. That's just madness. And it summed up that performance beautifully. To be fair, Giannis has missed 2.5 games of this series, but that's no excuse because Giannis did play in this one, and Jimmy Buckets got it done. So, what are your thoughts on this series for the Bucks, and what can they do to try to turn this ship around?
I mean, I think that if honestly, like, if any team was going to come back from a 3-1 deficit, it would be the Bucks here. Like, they have all the pieces. They do play, like, they're playing at home right now, and then game seven would be at home. So it is certainly doable. I think also the Heat losing, like, the Heat have lost Tyler Hero. They've lost Victor Oladipo. So they've been banged up already during this playoff run. But I think the Bucks' main problems lie with Jrue Holiday and with Chris Middleton. I think that Chris Middleton, he's been struggling the whole year, and I wouldn't say he's had a bad series thus far, but he has been a bit underwhelming, especially as a guy who, they kind of look to take over games in the fourth quarter. He's the sort of yin to Giannis's yang. Giannis will dominate on the inside and, get to the rim, just be extremely physical, but Chris Middleton will kill you with finesse moves, jumpers, mid-range, and he can really do it from distance. But when you don't have that aspect, then it just dynamic doesn't work as well. And Drew Holiday, he had an amazing regular season, maybe his best regular season in his career, and he's just playing like average. He's playing mediocre. They need him to step up because he was such a big factor for them. And I think like Giannis, he's been dealing with injuries, so I want to give him a bit of a pass, but he's not looking like the dominant MVP that we know he can be. So I think the problem lies with the Bucks' big three, in my eyes.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that the role players have stepped up. I think Brook Lopez has been pretty solid in the series and done what you've expected of him. I will say that his rim protection has been a little lackluster when it comes to defending Jimmy because he's been getting to the rim at will. But I don't think that's like a Brook Lopez thing. That's just Jimmy Butler being that incredible kind of deal.
Yeah.
So that's, if anything, more on Drew Holiday because he's the one who's supposed to be able to contain Jimmy Butler, considering he's the best defender in the league according to other players. And I do think that's true, but he's got to be able to lock in a little bit more.
Definitely.
It's a lot harder than it sounds to just say, oh yeah, just go and defend Jimmy Butler. Go defend playoff Jimmy. Just lock him down. It's not that easy. But I will say Chris Middleton has been stepping up in this game. As of right now, he's got 17 points. But go
Yeah.
ahead, what were you going to say?
I was gonna say, like, let's put the chips down on the table. You got the Bucks coming back to win this series, or you got the Heat taking it?
I got the Heat taking it tonight.
Wow. Honestly, I'm gonna have to agree with you there. Let's go
Yeah.
Heat. Wow.
Yeah, Heat in five, which would be crazy. But I'm gonna have to take it. I have a question for you. What do you think of Kevin Love starting for the Miami Heat in this series?
I mean, it's working. And if it's working, keep going with it. I think that, he brings a lot of veteran experience. He's a guy who can stretch the floor for you. He can obviously bang down low in the paint a little bit. Not as much as he used to, like when he was in Minnesota, but still, that is a part of his game. And I think that, like Miami, they don't really have a lot of size on their team. Like all their bigs are all kind of undersized. Bam, Biombo, or no, who am I? Who's their
They have
backup?
Cody Zeller.
Yeah, Zeller's like fine, but like, who's their is it is Deadman still on the team? I think
No,
it's
it's Cody Zeller.
oh,
I think they made a trade for
okay.
Cody Zeller.
They did move him. Sorry, I was thinking of the Miami. They basically kept the same roster the past 4 years, just like
Yeah.
swapping out backup centers.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just don't think that they're necessarily like a big team. So I think that Kevin Love, it was a great acquisition, and it's really coming to, pay dividends here.
Yeah,
But
I also really like Kyle Lowry coming off the bench for them because I think when he started, he'd run out of gas really easily because he's just a high motor player, but because he's older. And I think coming off the bench and giving him spurts is a way better way to combat it.
definitely. And we've seen big shots as well hit from guys like Cody Martin and Duncan Robinson. He's having a resurgence of a series. Like
Wait,
finally,
who? Which Martin?
Cody. Wait, no.
It's Caleb. Caleb is on the Heat.
Man,
It
it was one of the Martins.
one of the Martins. It's okay.
It's been a long day, but yeah, I think that I've also really been impressed by D Duncan Robinson for like finding his way back in the rotation, hitting big time shots. So credit to him. We both have Heat in five. Let's talk about the last series, and that'll be the last thing we talk about in this episode. And that's the Grizzlies winning game five at home against the Los Angeles Lakers to make the series 3-2. So Hunter, Lakers, they stole that game on the road. Ja missed game two, but the Grizzlies won. Lakers defended home court, and now the Grizzlies go back and win a game. Do you think that this is going to seven?
No. And I don't say this as a Laker fan. I think this is what most analysts had as the expected output for the series. Game five or game four was an incredible game, that overtime game. LeBron had that 22-20 game. And that took a lot out of him. As you'd expect, a 38-year-old can only pour so much into basketball in a single night. That's just a big physical toll. We've never seen a player at this age give such production and be so incredible and be able to find like this athleticism and the strength to do this for 40 something minutes in a game. And that just means that instead of paying the repercussions for it in the moment, he pays for it later. And I think that showed tonight. has been very underwhelming from three, the three in this series. I think he's shooting under 20% from three.
Shooting 16%.
16% from three for LeBron James. Abysmal. Like, just disgusting. He's getting, when he's attacking the rim, he looks great, but he can't attack the rim every single time. And when people say, LeBron, why don't you just attack the rim? Why don't you just do this? Why don't you just do this? He's not 28, he's 38. And he has to take breaks. He can't just run down the court every single time because he's going to gas himself, and he knows that. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And LeBron knows this better than anyone. And I think the best thing for this Lakers team coming back for game six is the fact that they have LeBron James, the guy who's been there more than anyone. He's going to be very level-headed about it. He's going to speak to the team from the point of experience. He's going to sort of rally the troops. I really did expect that the Grizzlies would come out with the requisite amount of desperation needed to win this game, because this is the last, that's it. You know, if they don't win this game, that's it. And they're the younger team. They have the better legs. They can play more time. They can play an overtime game, come back home, and they'll be fine. But the Lakers, you know, Anthony Davis has been sort of beat up this entire year. Who knows what the hell is going on with him from a health standpoint? He's always got little things. And obviously, LeBron was underwhelming, but he's just needs the rest. So when your two stars are kind of down a little bit like that, it's hard for the rest of the guys to pick it up. And so far in the series, I think Rui Hachimura and Austin Reaves have been what saved them. And Rui wasn't great tonight, and Austin had a decent performance. But decent and okay isn't going to get you to a win.
Yeah, especially when you have like Dylan Brooks explode, or sorry, not Dylan Brooks, Desmond Bane exploding in the first like half pretty much and dropping like 20 points. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you here. I think that, you know, the Lakers, they're not coasting. They didn't coast tonight, but I think they didn't really play with the same urgency. They didn't have the same need to win this game. And so LeBron, he played 45 minutes in that game four. AD played something like 40 or 42. And so they were tired this game. You could see it. They weren't putting in the same effort. They didn't look as fluid. LeBron was settling for the three. He was turning the ball over. I expect the Lakers to come out with a little bit more urgency and win at home because they know the severity of the situation if they lose, you know? Grizzlies would have a lot of momentum going into a game seven. And LeBron, as a guy who's been here more than anybody in NBA history, knows that, you know, you don't let that happen. So I think that the
And not
Lakers,
only, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I'm just saying, I think the Lakers are closing this out in six. I think AD has played very, very well for the most part of the series. He's had a couple stinkers here and there, but defensively, I agree with you. He's been the best player in these playoffs. And I think he's also been being like he has games on offense like tonight where he's just very dominant as well. So I expect a similar two-way performance from him, you know, come that game six.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the X factor for this Lakers team is going to continuously be Anthony Davis. Is Anthony Davis on? And he was on tonight. I will say this was a strange game for the Lakers, and we've mentioned those reasons on the pod so far. But you know, Anthony Davis had 32 and 19. And when you look at those numbers, you would assume that the Lakers win a game where Anthony Davis is that dominant, but they didn't, and that's because nobody else really brought it like he did. So I think if they go back and Anthony Davis has another performance like that, there's no way in hell that the Lakers are going to lose that game. Like you were said, Desmond Bane had an incredible performance. Ja had another incredible performance. And when those two guys are on, it's really hard to stop. The Grizzlies were hitting everything from the perimeter, and the Lakers just weren't. It didn't look like they even cared to defend the three. Like they were just lazy out there. And again, that urgency that the Grizzlies had is a big reason for that. And the lackadaisical nature of the Lakers is because they feel like they can just go home and win it.
Yeah. You got Lakers in six, though.
Yeah, for sure. I got Lakers in six. And another thing I want to add on is, like with LeBron, not only does he know, like, oh, I don't want to go to game seven because that, you know, it's just that's becomes a March Madness game at that point, just winner take all. Not only that, but you're just not giving yourself enough rest and enough prep time to get to the next round, because it's not even just about giving yourself the fresh legs and resting. It's about being able to mentally prepare and figure out what do I need to think about in this next series, the matchup and everything that goes on. You want to give yourself as much time as possible to prepare and scout out the next team you're going to play.
I agree with you wholeheartedly there. Yeah, but I think that's a good place to call it. Great episode as per usual. And I think that, we've been seeing some really, really exciting stuff in these playoffs. So make sure you tune in next week where we'll be breaking down the rest of the action and probably getting to the second round by then. So make sure you tune in then, and we'll see you all there. Take
Peace.
care. Bye-bye.